Welcome, We Earn Media listeners. Today we have Luz Corona with us as our guest. She is the community editor at Adweek and oversees the Voice section, which is an opinion column featuring perspectives from advertisers, marketers, influencers, and tech professionals. She also moderates interviews and panels and co-hosts the flagship podcasts. Yeah, that's probably an ad. Welcome, Luz.
Thanks, Britt. Hi, Jacqueline. Thank you for having me. Hey, I think that was a really solid overview, pretty much, of what I do.
Perfect. Well, we want to learn more about your role as a community editor. You already shared a lot with me via email, but we want to hear more from you. What does your role entail?
Yeah, so it's pretty much what you mentioned, handling voice, doing the podcast, moderating. And really it's about the title speaks for itself, connecting with people in the community. Through my time here, I started on the community team here, which now as the editor, I'm on the editorial team. But I started out on community, which was involved our mentorship program. So I was able to meet a lot of people through that. And those are the marketers that I've kind of really come to know and tap for voice pieces or perhaps, podcast interviews. So yeah, that's pretty much how I got my start here. And then going into what you just described as my role here.
Neat. Okay, great. Well, I'm all curious to know more about the Adweek voice column personally. I've gone through the process and I know there's a form involved. We'll link to the form so our listeners can also check it out in case they want to pitch you and see more, see it in action basically, and see what it entails. But can you break down what the interest form questions are for our listeners and sort of highlight that process a bit?
Yeah, for sure. So it's for our voice section, which is our op-ed section, where we publish these perspectives by people in the ad industry. And that can range from tech to entertainment to media. I mean, advertising is at the intersection of everything these days, right? So specifically, we created this form just because our other editor who reviews contributions with me, Will Russo, we just get such an influx of direct pitches to our inbox that would often get buried, and they still do sometimes, So we created this form for anyone interested in contributing, and you fill it out. Basically, you put your basic information in and a pitch. Sometimes people will put in the full draft. Really, it should be a pitch that, whether it's the angle plus a small overview or something. And then we also ask people to write why this topic, why the ad industry, would care about this topic, what their expertise stems from, their experience and everything. So it's really kind of like making a pitch to Adweek for that.
Yeah, I really appreciated the concise guidance that was given in the form itself. Having gone through my client with it and put a pitch, a proposal together, it was really helpful just to break it down into sections.
That's great. Thank you.
But I can't remember how I came across it, to be honest. if I Googled it, and I wish now that I'm thinking of it, I wish I could remember. Do you know, is it on the website somewhere?
So it's on the Adweek website, but you know where I think you might have seen it? It's in I have an auto response for my email, and that gives the general information for anyone, just because I get so many direct pitches, and there's just a better chance of it getting seen if it goes through the portal.
Awesome. Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I have questions.
Really, go for it. Yeah.
Do you ever... So yeah, if it's through the form, you're more likely to see it. But do direct pitches, do they work too for you, or do you kind of tend to prioritize the form more than anything?
So that's a great question, because it varies, and I know probably to anyone listening, they're probably disappointed to hear that. But
that's okay.
It's nuanced.
Yeah. But basically, we encourage the portal because it'll definitely get reviewed there. Will and I check it once a week, pretty much. We have our designated time on our calendars, and we review the pitches. We mark off the ones that have potential, and we say in an auto response, you know, to the contributor form, like, you'll hear from us if we move forward with your pitch. Just because there's such an influx of pitches, we can't possibly respond to all of them, even if we don't accept them. And then I encourage anyone who I have kind of an existing relationship with, and this is, I'm sure you guys know just from this part, being in this part of the industry, it's those relationships that I've created through this, that I've met comms people and PR people in person. Those are the names that I remember. So if they come up on my inbox, you know, I'm like, oh, so-and-so emailed me. I got to get back to them today. But if it's like a cold outreach email, my auto reply clarifies you should submit through the portal because it most likely just won't get viewed.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, relationships do go a long way in your world then.
They do. They do. Just because there's just so – there's such a high volume of pitches that come in, and – if I meet someone face to face, like, it just, that's just like the nature of it, you know, whether it's at an event or really quick, you know, if we're able to grab a coffee or something. But there has to be a reason to meet and everything. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
What are some of those reasons? Can you give examples?
Yeah, like reasons to meet up?
Yes.
Or,
So,
good question.
Yeah, oftentimes, you know, we will get outreach from people asking, like, would love to grab a coffee, would love to do this. Like, I hate to say it, but, you know, like, we have so much going on here. If I could get coffee with everyone, I'd be really caffeinated really and happy, caffeinated. You know? Yeah, you know, it would be
understandable.
Great, but yeah, you know, sometimes it'll happen if there's a time, like, I'm meeting with a few, lately I've been meeting with a few comms people and PR people that I've worked with on a few pieces, so now we kind of have some kind of existing working relationship, and then it's easier to say, like, yeah, let's grab a coffee, I want to hear more about your clients, what are different angles there? So that's kind of how it happens, like, either we've worked on a few pieces together, or they're from a company that maybe we cover a lot or something like that, or they have thought leaders they want to put forward. So it all varies.
Awesome. No, that's really helpful.
Yeah, it's super helpful.
I have a question going back to the form. On average, can you say how many submissions you get?
Yeah, it's crazy. Honestly, I feel like combined with the form and direct pitches to our inbox, I'd say we get like 50 a week.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That's yeah.
That is so much considering like it's
what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's marketers. I mean, there are a lot of marketers, so I shouldn't be surprised, but
yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, obviously everyone has great perspectives, you know, and we want to publish it, but sometimes you'll get overlapping pitches, you know, sometimes like everyone wants to talk about AI, you know, we're all talking about AI, but at this point we've covered it to the extent that we need to find a new angle. So if we're going to publish a voice piece on AI, it has to come from an angle that we haven't really explored before. So maybe like, you know, a while back we had someone in the C-suite, Ricardo Diaz from Omelet, you know, he talked about how they're incorporating AI in their ad agency model. So that's something interesting because it had actionable insights. It was like a real, almost like a case study and something that the reader can learn from.
Mm.
So I have a question regarding, so you have time in your calendar that you and your colleague review these pitches. Is there like a quota that you guys meet? Like, are you aiming to say yes to a certain number of queries, or is it just whatever looks good to you, you kind of take note of?
That's a good question too.
We excuse me, we have a system in place where we review every email carefully, we categorize it, so whether it's like AI or, you know, media or DEI, so we have that. So then if we have something come up later on, we can kind of look through and, you know, oh, we had flagged this person that we couldn't get to back then, but maybe they'd be interested in the topic now. Yeah, so we do that. It really depends on, like, how busy things are. So right now we're planned out for a bit, right? Like, we're kind of scheduled out. I was counting before I chatted with you guys. We have 35 pieces in the works, like voice pieces.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, you know,
how
waiting.
How many months of content is that?
That is, I would say, like, a month and a half, because we do, like, 3 to 4 pieces a week. But that is, so that's 35 pieces right now in the works, whether they're fully written and have already been edited and reviewed by us, or it's been pitched, or we're waiting for a second draft, you know, a second round of edits after we provide feedback. So that's the 35 in the queue right now. But that is not including timely pitches, which we prioritize at Adweek. So you guys know this, like there's just often like a viral moment or something happening and chatter, you know, like what happened with the Solo Stove piece. And voice is kind of like a vertical that we can use to jump on those kinds of topics and get, and you know, turn it around and get like a hot take on it. So those take priority.
Because this is, I think the third time that this Solo Stove campaign has just naturally popped up in our conversations. So it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
It was a big one.
It was a really big one, and that came to life in an interesting way, too. So I know we'll get to that part. But, yeah, it can come to life in different ways. The drafts that we have are all in different stages. And sometimes, you know, I'll tell the comms people, and I understand the frustration, like, you know, a voice piece, if we say it'll go, it's supposed to go out first week of March. But then if we had, like, timely pieces come in, everything gets shifted, you know. So I just, now I just ask everyone, like, let's stay close. Like, this is the date that I have the piece planned at the moment, but let's check back in a week before to see if it's still there for that week.
I think that's really kind of you.
Thank you.
I never expect journalists or editors to ever like tell me a time frame and to offer up to check in, like that's super generous.
Thank you. I try. I feel so bad, especially if it's a piece that we have accepted and I just can't physically get to reviewing that draft and it's bookmarked in my inbox and I see it come in and I have a designated day to review drafts, you know, and then I'll review it that day. But, you know, it can be frustrating if you told your client that you were going to publish, the piece was going to be published on Adweek, you know, at X day and it's been 2 or 3 weeks and still nothing, you know. So that's a part of the process that I'm trying to get a little bit better at.
Yeah, that is really generous.
Yeah. Thank you.
I wanted to, before we kind of go into a more specific example of a pitch or a proposal that caught your attention, there's a quick question I had about topics. You mentioned AI is sort of a topic that you receive a lot of pitches and proposals around. Are there any other topics that we can kind of just list out for our listeners to keep in mind when they're thinking about what to pitch you that you're kind of like not super interested in? And I know that might be hard to answer, but.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. I mean, we try to cover where there could be potential gaps in coverage in the newsroom. So, for example, like our media team is so robust and they're so on it and I just love them to death. So unless it's a really specific take in the media world, we won't really go down that route. Like everyone had something to say about the cookieless future, right? And all that. And we heard it and we did publish a few of those pieces, but our team is just, that coverage is on the Adweek site already, you know?
Yeah.
So our efforts would be better focused on, you know, other areas that we may not be covering as much.
Okay. So as a topic, it's That's broad, cool. but you want them to, you know, nail down into a specific, like you said, a specific take or a specific direction.
I think so. Those are like media. We don't, unless it's like a really unique take, we'll pursue that. But I would say agency hot takes are always relevant. I mean, our readers, a lot of them are from brand side or agency side. So we get those pitches, and those are usually pretty good because they're so relatable to the reader. So I would say agency pieces. Everyone had something to say about DEI. At this point, it's similar to what I said about AI before. It has to be a different kind of angle. You know, and different from what we've published before. I can't think of anything else, but I would say like the timely topics are probably the best way.
Okay, cool.
I like what you said too about filling in like gaps that, you know, if you're going to be covering it on the main site, maybe think about a more specific angle or something more, you know, that is better fulfilled by an outside expert versus one of your writers, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes there'll be, you know, sometimes we've pursued pieces on, like almost like a follow-up piece to trending articles we have. Sometimes we'll get pitches and it's like, oh, I saw, you know, so-and-so reporter write about this. I have a response to that, you know, and those can, sometimes those will go up as well. You know, if it's additive to the piece or if it's pointing out another angle, you know, we'll do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's a good thing to keep in mind just as you come up with ideas. That's
nice.
That's really good.
Thanks.
It does just speaks to the general kind of like, I guess, go-to advice that a lot of our journalists and guests share is to read the articles that you're pitching are producing and publishing just to inspire ideation and to show that you actually know and care about what the readers want to see and read.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, we try to like continue the story. You know, we may not be able to break something like the first day, but we do like feel like our team does a good job of like the follow up or like what's this next, you know, question that people will want answered after, you know, X news breaks out. That's sometimes where voice comes in. So yeah, it varies.
Makes sense.
I do have one more question, Britt, before we go into the example, if you're cool with that. I'm scared of forms. I'm sure many listeners are. But it seems like you definitely like review them all. But have you ever had anyone try to follow up through the form or through email? And do you think a follow-up is appropriate? Or do you think it's kind of like, trust us, we've got this, no need to follow up kind of thing?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I mean, I get it why people would resubmit, and they do, if they don't hear back because maybe they thought the form didn't go through.
Yeah,
so if that happened, you know, sometimes we'll get that. People will resubmit, and it's like, no, it's still rejected, you know. But if people, you know, sometimes people will email me directly and just be like, hey, I submitted this through the portal, like you said, but I haven't heard back. And then I'll respond like, hey, we're not moving forward with this. And sometimes people will ask for feedback and, you know, I try my best to get to it and provide feedback with why we're not moving forward with it. But, I mean, this is like every day, you know, so I try my best to get through to it, but it can be a little hard.
Okay, cool. That's great. That's a good answer. It's the answer I imagined, but it's nice to hear, you know, how that's viewed. Cause I've never resubmitted to forms, but I tend to always like follow up via email being like, hey, I filled out the form. What's up? And I never hear back, but you know.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes like, I was telling someone I got drinks with last night, actually like a comms person. And, I was explaining to them like, you know, if someone will follow up, if it's a cold outreach email, I'm not going to respond. You know, I could tell you also sent it to like five other outlets, like, you know, so I don't feel as bad. But if it's someone who follows up like a few times, I'm like, let me put this person out of their misery and just like tell them we're not moving forward with this. But really, it's not like we're ignoring, you know, it sucks because behind every there's a human there, you know, just doing their job, trying to get their client exposure. But it's just such a high volume. And you want to give people like a strong response, too, because sometimes if I respond and say we're not moving forward with it, then they'll be like, oh, well, can you give feedback? We'd love to get placed in Adweek. You know, we'd love some kind of, you know, and I try my best to get to it. But we get a lot of those emails, you know.
Yeah. And it's not your job to tell them, you know, all the little details. So like, that form is very specific about what you guys are looking for.
Thank you. Yeah, our executive editor, he's not here anymore, Paul Barbagallo, he really, like, redefined the criteria and just kind of reshaped it a little bit. And another thing I was going to say before we jump into examples is I understand, like, comms people, they sent a draft and I haven't, you know, I can't respond right away, but I think this is a good part of our process is when we get a draft, we can't, sometimes I can skim it. And if I'm familiar with the writer, I know that they're familiar with our style and what we're looking for in voice. So I can skim it and just know like, okay, this looks good. I'll get back to them about when we'll publish it. But oftentimes we review the drafts and we want to provide feedback because we want to also make it easier for the writer. We don't want to be vague in our feedback and just be like, can you make it a little this or can you make, you know, and just providing examples or including some prompts or, you know, can you add some evidence or stats to back up this part? And I think that's, it's almost like a misconception of op-eds, at least for Adweek, is people will just, you know, will write these opinion pieces, but some may lean speculative. It could be someone's opinion or like a rant or something. And that's something we're putting out in the world. So we have to make sure that it's substantial and there's evidence and examples in there to back it up if someone is making an argument for something. So that's included in the whole feedback process.
Very cool. Now, with the pitch, do you appreciate it if there's a couple of, like, some sort of data to back up what it is that the opinion might be in the form itself?
I think data doesn't always have to be included in the pitch, but some kind of example or something to back up the premise or the thesis. You know, if it's someone saying, like, you know, design should be this way, okay, you know, what is there to back it up? Yeah, you know, so we try to kind of back it up with something of substance.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
It does. Speaking of the resubmissions or resubmitting a proposal, what if it's just a brand new proposal, you know?
Yeah, those are, if it's a brand new proposal, I mean, listen, those are half of the ones that we accept. You know, people don't need to have an existing relationship, like, you know, or messages on LinkedIn. Like, we get really solid pitches sometimes. You know, and it definitely leaves a mark on us, you know, sometimes. And this happens a lot. And I think it's the positive of being here for a while now is, you know, sometimes a topic will come up or my colleagues will ask for a source and I'm like, oh, this, I can think of the person who wrote about a topic related to this and then send that info. So, and that'll be like brand new people, you know, so that can happen too. And then that's the premise of the relationship. Great. That's ideal.
Okay.
Right.
Cool.
And it can be built upon that, right?
Like exactly.
I think we had a publicist come on, her name's Domenica, and she kind of has this like theory that if there's two pitches that are equally as good, and let's say both stories are great, but the journalist who's reviewing it has a relationship with one publicist over the other, then they're more likely to pick all things equal, so it's not like a perfect one for one, but all things equal, they would likely go more with the person they have a relationship with. I think that feels maybe like it could be true.
I'm trying
it's
to
a hard thing to say
example.
Yes
it is
to,
it
yeah.
is yeah I
not really that necessarily yeah
yeah that hasn't specifically happened to me, although I understand that rationale, that makes total sense. What has happened to me is we'll get pitches on the same topic and it'll be two different takes, and then we kind of have to, you know, we'll be like, oh, these are good, you know, but we'll go with the angle that benefits our readers more.
Yeah, that's okay. Above all really what matters most, right?
Yes. Yeah exactly, because I mean I could be friends with like a comms person and be great, but that piece may not be as strong as the brand new one we got in, you know, so it's always for the benefit of the reader. Yeah.
Yep. At the end of the day, it's the story that you're pitching, right?
Right.
Yep.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. No, I'm thinking, because if like, say somebody submitted a proposal, hadn't heard back in, let's just say like 2 months, resubmitted another one, but it's a completely different topic. It sounds like that's something that wouldn't irritate you, as long as it's,
oh yeah,
you know, they've
no.
perfected the proposal, they've, you know, dotted all their I's, crossed their T's, you know, determined what would be a good story and did their due diligence, you know. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, yeah. People can resubmit. I mean, I'll sometimes see the same comms person submit 5 pitches for 5 different clients. That's totally fine.
Okay.
You know, we're like, they had a busy day, you know?
Yeah. They're busy.
Yeah.
Good for them. So,
yeah. So that's totally fine.
Okay.
What about like a weekly pitch, but it's been pretty mediocre, all the ideas, so whatever.
Yeah. Wait, I'm sorry. What was the question? Sorry.
So, comms person sending a weekly pitch, but they're all pretty mediocre. Does that get aggravating, or is it just like it is what it is? You know,
it is what it is.
Maybe one day they'll pitch something good. Okay.
Yeah, it is what it is. But I do like what you guys said earlier. I mean, it really helps when, you know, the people pitching read the Adweek site, because sometimes we'll get pitches and it's like, then you don't really know what we cover if you're pitching this, you know, or there has to be a marketing angle, an advertising angle. You know, sometimes we'll get pitches like, would you, you know, be interested in writing a feature on so-and-so? And it's like, this person sounds great, but there needs to be a timely hook. Why now? What's the angle? You know?
Yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
Jinx. Cool. Shall we move into the example? I really love this example that we're about to talk about. So I'm super excited. How does that sound?
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, totally. Let's do it.
Awesome. So you sent across an article titled CES 2024 and Eureka Park Unveiled Tomorrow's Neatest Trends in Consumer Tech. And it was written by Goldie Chan, founder of Warm Robots, which is a social media strategy agency based in LA. And in that article, Goldie summarizes different consumer trends that she saw at CES, specifically in the Eureka Park display, as the title says. Within that article, though, and we'll link to it in the show notes so that our listeners can go check it out, there's so many cool products that she points out, by the way. The Nimble manicure set robot thing. Oh my gosh.
Yes. So cool.
So cool. But back to the pitch or the proposal. Tell us how that all came to be.
Yeah, so this is just another example of like relationship building. So Goldie Chan, who I highly recommend following on LinkedIn, I mean, she's got a great perspective on the state of the industry, especially DEI. She writes really stellar pieces for like, she wrote one for us, she writes for Forbes. So just in general, she's got a really good following. And this came from a phone call that I had with Goldie. Oh. It was like a Zoom call I had. Yeah. So we had seen each other. Yeah. Right? Like all this came from a phone call. So
that wasn't on my bingo card.
Yeah. Right? So Goldie and I had seen each other on social, and I say it like you see people, but you know, like some people just keep popping up, especially on marketing Twitter. When I was on Twitter, you get to know like people. So Goldie and I had always kind of like quote unquote seen each other, and we were just like, finally, like there was one day one of us reached out and was like, let's just meet, you know. So we started talking about potential topics for Voice. She was interested in writing for Voice and agreed on the CES piece to start. Now this also comes from the fact that I think we did have someone out in CES, but it always helps, you know, to just get like a little more coverage on it. So Goldie was out there. And what I love about this is sometimes you never know what you're going to get. Sometimes it can be a general pitch. Sometimes the pitch can sound like really beautiful, and then, you know, maybe the draft isn't what you envisioned. In this case, I knew it was going to be an overview about CES. And we also like to give writers like the freedom to just, you know, come up with their own angle. We don't want to force anybody to pursue an angle that, you know, we may think, you know, we just kind of give some prompts. But in this case, I knew it was going to be an overview. Goldie gave it a unique angle where she focused on a specific part of CES, in this case, Eureka Park, which is the buzzworthy startup area. These are things that I didn't know. And she summarized it into three trends that signal a shift in consumer preferences. These are all things that our readers want to know about. It could have been a quick hit summary about what she saw, but she added a personal spin to it that benefited the reader. And that piece, you guys, like, it trended for days on the site. It actually was published, trended for a few days, and then popped up again like a week or two later. And I don't know if it's like, I was trying to remember the timing because I felt like it was leading up to Super Bowl. And, you know, in the midst of all these other articles, like Goldie's article was top trending too. And that could be to SEO purposes. Maybe people were looking up CES or Eureka Park, which is in the headline, you know, and that comes up. But that piece did phenomenal. And I really think it's because they summarized it well. It reminded me of another piece from a writer, Christina Garnett. She's a really strong contributor for us. And she wrote a piece like a year or two ago called I'm Not in the C-Suite, Here's What I Got from Cannes. So that also is like a different angle. It could be what is going on at CAN and how to make the most of it. But she specifically made it clear, I'm not in the C-suite. If you're not in the C-suite, you're going to CAN, here's what you can expect. And so it's a different, it has that personal angle to it, but it also informs the reader so that they can then take that to their own and apply it to their own work, which is always the end goal here.
Wow, that's really powerful. And it sounds like these articles in the community, like, they serve a really important purpose for Adweek. Am I thinking that?
Thank you. I think so. You know, I think just highlighting perspectives in the community in general, it's like my favorite part of the job. But you also get like these, you learn about these personal takes that can really teach you something. And that's why both these pieces that I just mentioned, they trended like for a while. They really got a lot of attention.
Very cool.
Yeah, this one by Goldie published on January 18th. So, I mean, the Super Bowl was quite a bit away. Well, I mean, in marketing terms, quite a bit away, but
yeah,
in normal terms, right around the corner.
Well, we were already starting to cover Super Bowl then too, so that coverage was out, and this was like in there, and it was just, and I went into like the analytics, and I'm like, where is this coming from? Like, where?
Yeah.
And it was just like natural, I think, like online. I can't remember if it was SEO or if it was LinkedIn, but it just naturally
it was
earned,
shared widely.
Yeah, it could have been shared widely. It just earned media.
Yeah, very cool. I love the article. I'm a self-proclaimed skimmer, but I loved the way that this article was put together, because even without having to like dive in deep, you can understand what the article's about and you can pull information from it quickly. I think it's like, you know, kind of akin to the marketing industry, especially like with a digital publication, it's important to have like eye-catching stuff like this that even if someone's not sitting down, spending a long time on the page, they can grab the information that they need. So I think it's really well done.
Yeah, and I think like pieces like this where there's like a clear thesis, you know, it's like here is what we saw, and then subheads that can point to either the lessons or summary, you know, that those are the pieces that people will get to the end of it.
Very cool. Yeah, nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's not very long, and it's in very nice buckets
of paragraphs.
Yeah. And very cool. I love it. I did notice too that Goldie had contributed to an article previously, but it was like, in 2021. Mm-hmm. Is that maybe when you had met Goldie originally as well? I'm just kind of theorizing.
Yeah, no, I wasn't community editor then, so that was a different community editor. So that's how I knew of her, too. I knew she had written for us before, too.
Okay, neat, cool. Neat. And how do you all still, it says this one was just a random question here. By 1 to 4 different people. How does that work? Oh, I see. Oh. This is about a few different creators. Okay. Sorry, I did notice that earlier when I was thinking about adding this question, and I've answered it myself now.
No worries.
So forget I said that.
I was confused. I didn't even know what you were asking. What are you talking about? The article that they contributed to before? Okay,
That was for API month, I think, yeah.
Yes, it's about, the title for that was These Asian American Creators Want Visibility and We Want to Be Seen for Who We Are. So it makes sense as to why there were four different contributors for that one. Okay, anywho. sometimes, you know, when you like look at something and then you think of a question, but you need to read a little more, that's what I did. But I did that like 2 days ago when I was the same thing. All right, cool. Let's see. What other questions did I have about this particular piece? Was there anything? You mentioned, this is a question that just came up when you were talking about it, but you mentioned there was a lot of engagement, people talking about the article. Can you remember any threads or like points that they were making?
Yeah, about the CES one or the Solo Stove one?
Oh, the CES or the CAM one.
The CES one. I think people were just sharing it or reposting it. I think Goldie has a strong following, so that might be why. And it was a hot topic at the moment, so that could be why.
Okay, gotcha. And one question about that, too. You said Goldie has a strong following. Is that a criteria that you happen to check out before you accept someone as a voice contributor?
No, not at all.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah. I love that answer.
Phew. Yeah, yeah. There's strong perspectives out there that still need to get told regardless of following. You know, I think that's the benefit of this. Like, you want to get some junior talent pieces out there. You want to get senior talent pieces, thought leadership, you know. So, yeah, that doesn't matter.
Very cool. All
that's
right.
Good. That's really good. Because we've gotten, I'm thinking back, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but we have, depending on the medium, we have had like producers say that it does matter. So it's nice to know that it might not always be the case for every publication out there, you know?
Oh yeah, no, not us, no.
Cool, great. Anyway, back to regular schedule.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, because I've had that question just as a publicist / PR person. Like, do I need to work on my social following? And it's always like, well, it depends. You don't want to do this. Depends on who we're pitching.
I think it's helpful when people are active on LinkedIn. I spent a lot of time on LinkedIn before it was marketing Twitter. That's kind of where I would like scour for, you know, hot takes on timely topics. I would look on Twitter and when I was on there, and now LinkedIn. So I think it always helps if people post and just kind of show their expertise. Sometimes like I'll find someone that could be good. I'm like, oh, their background, they could speak well to this topic perhaps. But if I haven't seen them post in like 6 months, I'm like, they might not be available on here.
Do you ever pitch people based on how you see their, you know, pitch people yourself saying, hey, why don't you contribute?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've done it. And we've gotten some good pieces out of that. I spent a lot of time on LinkedIn. Sometimes my colleagues will send me like someone on their feed and they have like a really great take on something in marketing. So, you know, I'll reach out to them and say, would you be interested in writing a voice piece on this topic, you know, or things like that. And, especially, and then for timely pieces, I kind of do that too. There's the contributors that I think of and the comms people who I think maybe their client roster could lend to expertise here. I'll, you know, send an email out. Do you have anyone who'd be interested in writing about this timely topic? And I'll also look on LinkedIn. I'll search the topic, or sometimes it's a trending topic right there, like the top right corner of LinkedIn where you have all those trending, and you click on it and see who's chiming in. And if there's a good, strong take in there with things that could inform the reader, then I'll reach out.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
That's cool.
That's good to know. Yeah. Let's talk about that Solo Stove article. I didn't plan to, and I didn't have it in our notes, and Jackie probably hasn't seen it, so I feel bad bringing it up, but you've mentioned it a few times. Do you want to just summarize it for our listeners real quick and tell us more about that? It sounds like it was a pretty neat proposal that you want to kind of dive into.
Yeah, actually, I found that writer. We didn't get a pitch. Yeah, cool. So once we saw the solo stove thing, I mean, we all saw it take off, the conversation, the chatter. We had even just had like folks from the Martin Agency on the podcast a few weeks prior, and they were like really incredible people, you know, so it was like definitely a buzzy topic. So for that, I went to LinkedIn. I think it might have been trending, and I might have just even clicked on the topic to see. And there are people offering their takes. Like, sometimes you'll get the really personal ones. You already know that might not make for a really strong voice piece in this instance, because it might just be so personal and just like so heavily opinionated that it may kind of skim down on the insights and the recommendations for the reader. So what I tried to look for, and I found it in Sam Joseph, who's the chief revenue officer of Kyra, this like creator company, this global creator company. But he had some really good points in his LinkedIn post about Solo Stove. I think it was about ROI, perhaps like what could have gone wrong, you know, and it didn't feel like super personal. I heard his voice in it, but it also, you could tell he had expertise in this space and could speak to it. And so I reached out to him, and he turned it around, I think, in 24 hours. That's a challenge, too. Like, we need to get on it because it's a timely topic. So, you know, I tell people, I'm like, do you think you could have this within 24 to 48 hours?
Okay. Ooh, pressure's on. So did you go to him with a specific topic or an article idea, or were you just like, how did that work out?
No, I saw his angle, like I just saw in his post, like, and okay. I was like, would you like to build on this for voice? Because I don't try to encourage, I'll include prompts sometimes, like, you know, here are some questions to think about whether, you know, this may interest you and building on or things like that. But really, I like to give the writer freedom to kind of form their own opinion and what they want to focus on.
Okay. Nice. And technical question here. Did you reach out on through LinkedIn? Did you email them?
LinkedIn.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
And how do you feel about that? People pitching you on LinkedIn, X, Twitter, Instagram?
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes people will connect and they'll be like, I want to write for voice. How can I do that? I send them the portal link and,
okay.
You know, sometimes I'll be like, you can send me like an email to my inbox if you want and like give me a heads up. You know, if it's someone that I have like
a connection,
a few back and forth with. Yeah.
Okay.
And so like this happened to me recently. Someone had reached out to me on LinkedIn and was like, where can I submit? And I gave them the link and they're like, I submitted, and they followed up again. And I felt, you know, I felt so bad. And then finally I got back to them and I'm like, I read the draft. I finally read the draft. Let's do it. Let's move forward, you know. And, yeah,
done that. Okay, that makes sense. Two totally different, like, things, but still worth asking. We have a lot of different answers on that as well.
Nice.
Great. Jackie, are there any other questions that you have that we didn't discuss before I move on to maybe our final question?
It's kind of random, but I'm on your LinkedIn profile, Luce. And I'm so curious about, like, it's always interesting, like, the journalists that cover things, like, and the editors that work for these types of publications that are very, like, industry-focused. We don't have to go too deep into the weeds, but how did you decide that this was going to be your line of work? Because I noticed you started out in marketing many years ago, so let's...
Yeah.
How did I get here?
Yeah.
How did you get here?
It's a good question. How did you get here? No, I'm really glad you asked that, because I started out in media agency world for like 8 to 10 years. I started out in digital media buying, and then I always wanted to go a little more creative, and I ended up in content production. So that's kind of, that was like my last role at agency side was a content manager. And then pandemic happened, got laid off because production stopped. And then I applied to a content manager role at Adweek on the community team, like what I had mentioned earlier. And that was like writing the Women Trailblazers features and, you know, handling content there. And that wasn't editorial. That was just like community. It was just because I was in content. And then our editor in chief at the time, Steph Patterick, she's not here anymore, but I am so indebted to her for even believing in me and approaching me. You know, she was like, we have this community editor role. How would you like to cover it in the meantime while we fill the role? Because the person had left before me. And I said, yeah, I'll cover it. And then and she's like, I think you have really good, I think she said editorial integrity or just like, just basic or editorial judgment. And just from working on community. So I did that. And then I was like, I'd like to throw my name in the ring. And that's how I got here. So journalism was not on my bingo card in my career. But that's how I ended up here.
Well,
you're thriving. And
thank
you. You're passionate about it. And it shows. So
thank
that's
you.
A really nice story. I like that.
Thank you. Me too.
Great question. Cool. Cool. Well, we like to end this with a shout out. You've given so many fantastic shout outs. But is there anybody else in the comms or marketing space that you want to give kudos to?
Yeah, I have my list here. I almost like want to
unwrap a scroll.
Yes. Yeah, because there are just so many great people out there. And I know I'm forgetting like really great people, too. But yes, it's people I've been fortunate enough to meet with like in person or come to be familiar with via email. So Cappy Cop from Ogilvy, you know, what I love about working with her is she's quick to respond and has made a lot of recent opportunities happen. So, you know, for example, example, we had the Super Bowl podcast episode. I know this isn't voice, but we had the Super Bowl podcast episode with the CeraVe team. And that was from having conversations with Cappy like the week before the Super Bowl. And, you know, the CeraVe campaign was starting to gain chatter. And
I loved that ad so much as a Tim and
so
Eric.
So good.
And right. I love all of Eric's work. It was super cool to see them do, you know, make it. It's crazy. It's
so it was
cool.
So there good.
You. I just had to interrupt. I fucking loved that commercial so much.
It was so good. And so we had to go a little bit deeper into that. And she made that happen, you know, and just coordinated it. And, you know, I wrote a cover story on, you know, Beacons for Diversity, and Darla Price, who's at Ogilvy, she was included in the story, and Cappy made it happen. And that was like from just like getting coffee with her and just kind of like discussing things. And also she's not like she's not pushy. Like it's just respectful. Like the people that I'm going to name now, it's always been people that have been respectful, even if I'm like radio silent for like 2 weeks, you know. Mm-hmm. Someone else is Sarah Solomon, who's founder and CEO of Publify Relations, and she represents Mita Malik, who has become a pretty much a regular contributor of ours on DEI. And I like Sarah because she's come to understand what we're looking for. Like, she knows we like actionable insights, brand examples, and I really, like, if I get a pitch from her, we usually accept it just because it has that different unique angle and all those things I mentioned earlier, and there's very minimal edits, you know. So Sarah's come to really understand what we look for. I'm going to mention this next person just because it's so funny. Laura Goldberg from LBG Public Relations. So she got introduced to me through a former colleague of mine, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And she had a pitch, you know, and I would sometimes go a while without answering just because we have timely pitches and I have tons of other things going on here. And there was just one day that she put in the subject line, "Luce, have you been abducted by aliens?" And she was like, and the email was like, it genuinely made me laugh. And the email was like, "Luce, I'm starting to get concerned. Like, have you been taken?" You know, and like, you know, and then
that's
she's
so
like,
bold. I love it.
It was so bold. And she was really like being, you know, she was taking a risk, but luckily it worked out and it made me laugh. And I was like, Laura,
incredible.
Yes, I see
okay,
you.
That's rad.
Yeah, so I was like, I'm so sorry. I've not been taken by aliens. I promise you by end of week. You know, so she's come
cool.
to understand. Yeah.
I'm just going to throw it out. I'd be so nervous that you as an editor might take that email, screenshot it, and complain about it on like hashtag bad PR or something. So
yeah.
that's a great story. I love that.
Yeah, no, it was so funny. You know, though, like when you mentioned that, I have a story about that actually.
Oh, gosh.
Pet peeve of mine. And so okay. I did post about something, and I'll tell you
we
why.
Love pet peeves.
Yes, yeah. But the last two people I want to mention is like Tequila White. She has a strong roster of clients, and we usually find synergy in collaborating there, like whether it's like, you know, nominating her clients for awards. Like, she really cares about her people. So I, you know, she's someone that I think I'm going to meet in person soon, but someone I've like met with through email. And then Kenneth Hine, he's the chief comms officer of Code and Theory. He used to work at Adweek, so he gets it.
Cool.
And he politely nudges, and not often, which ironically that kind of stands out, you know, like especially knowing that he knows what it's like here and he knows I'm not ignoring him and that I just physically cannot get to this email or reviewing this draft. But he's another one that I've just only recently been introduced to via email. And he's on my list. So
nice.
That's it. That's my scroll.
That's amazing. Yeah. Thank you for coming prepared for that.
Yeah.
This is one of our favorite parts of the show. So we're going to make sure that all those people know you gave them an amazing shout out.
Oh, I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. What was that pet peeve story that you wanted to share real fast?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So this one, this was when I was on Twitter and someone had sent me a message and was like, and they... I had tweeted about my kids or something, and I think they use that in there. Sometimes it can work, and sometimes, most of the time, it won't. Like, you know, like, it's like, I know what you're doing. You're a PR person, and you're just using this kind of personal thing. Unless there's actual common ground or a point there, you know, I kind of know what you're doing. Like, and then there was something else, and I think a few people got this. This is actually the example that I was originally thinking of. They sent a picture, I think... quote unquote, of their kid's drawing and was like, I can't remember, but they tied it to their pitch. And it's like, how many people did you send this to? Like, it was just something like kind of borderline exploitative, and it just didn't sit right with me. And I think that was like, it's like, I know this tactic. Like, I'd rather you follow up 5 times, you know, instead of like kind of like these other tactics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was really it.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's a big difference there. So, yeah, that makes sense. Cool. Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much, Luce, for joining us today, for letting us pick your brain and ask some questions that we hadn't planned on talking to you about. Really appreciate your honesty and transparency. And thanks for being so passionate about what you do, too.
Yeah.
It shows, thank and you I love both. It. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Thank you both so much. I think this will help people kind of understand our process a little more and just know that we're not ignoring them and there's a lot that goes into it. So thank you both for doing this and having me on.
Yeah.